Welcome, all of you Wine and True Crime lovers. I'm Brandy.
And I'm Chris.
And this is Texas Wine and True Crime. Thank you for being here, friends, for this week's episode, The Case of James and Jennifer Crumbley. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Brandy.
We are going to be at Henry's Majestic, Chris, coming up on Thursday, May 2nd.
Not that long from now.
It's creeping up. So friends, come and see us at Henry's Majestic, located right in Dallas. We are there the first Thursday of every single month. Should be beautiful outside. So hopefully we'll be outside again because we had a great crowd. So come on out.
Yeah, I agree. It was a great time being outside for sure.
Yes, it was. And a lot of
added more to the ambiance.
Yeah, and a lot of people came to sit outside but didn't know we had the show going on and ended up staying through the entire thing.
And now they know.
All right, so first Thursday of every month at Henry's Majestic. All right, Chris, we've got a lot of food to talk about, a lot of wine to talk about, and unfortunately, another school shooting to talk about.
Yes.
So we're going to jump right in. So it's time to sip some wine and talk some crime. All right, honey. So we are going to be talking about a couple of things with this case. James and Jennifer Crumbley, who recently were convicted of four charges each of involuntary manslaughter for the purpose of gross negligence.
Yes, holding the parents accountable.
Now, this is a what they would call a precedent case because this is the first time parents are actually being held accountable in a school shooting.
And potentially many more to follow should this happen again.
Yes. And
since we have a precedent.
Yes. And I think that there is some concern in this case of parents being held responsible for bad things their kids do. But there's a lot more to this story. And that's why I wanted to do this case today. Last week, I was able to sit in the audience at the Dr. Phil show. And this is actually one of the episodes we filmed. So the DA was actually there, the judge, other people that were involved in the case, another reporter that actually interviewed some of the parents of the victims in Oxford, Michigan. So we're going to talk about the Oxford school shooting. Ethan Crumbley was 15 years old, Chris, when he brought a gun to school and shot four of his classmates, Hannah St. Juliana, Madison Baldwin, Justin Schilling, and Tate Mir. Now, the reason that I want to talk about this tonight is, one, when I was sitting in the Dr. Phil show and listening to some of the piece of key evidence from people actually in the courtroom, things I did not know about this case. And then thinking about the fact that we have now had this trial, there's been a conviction, both of them were convicted on these four charges each. 10 to 15 years is their sentence. They will be eligible for parole after the 10, Chris. And if the judge decides, or the parole board actually decides, that they are not ready to get out, they can keep them for another 5 years.
Wow. That is a long time.
So we are going to go back. And what I want to do is kind of talk about what leading up to this shooting. And then some of the flags, my God, call them red flags, call them cries for help that Ethan Crumbley was giving to not only his parents, but the people in his school, teachers who were noticing things. And so does the accountability go to the parents? Ethan Crumbley is spending the rest of his life in prison for this crime. He was 15 years old, Chris.
Well, it sounds like they're sharing part of that responsibility because, like I said, many red flags.
Many.
Not addressed. And so...
And so the court felt like we as parents have a duty to protect our community from our dangerous children.
I would agree, especially if those are documentable red flags.
Oh, yeah. The text messages, I mean, gosh, the we are in the world of technology and everything we say now seems to be in print. And it's very easy to go back and look at what these conversations, which is we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what the parents were discussing, what Ethan was asking of his parents, and the everyone dropping the ball on the day this happens. November 30th, 2021 is the day that the shooting takes place. Now, before we jump into that day, I want to talk about what was happening the first 4 days before this crime. So let's go back to November 26th. November 26th, Ethan and his father go into a gun store in their town, and they buy a gun. Okay? So they purchase this gun, and this is November 26th. Chris, this is 4 days before the shooting. 4 days. This kid doesn't have any other weapon at his house in regard to like him having access to any sort of weapons. 4 days. So this, we're going to talk about the thoughts and the premeditation that this boy was having.
He didn't have access. There were no other weapons in the house. It's the only weapon in the house.
I don't know if there were other guns or in the house. I only know that this gun was put in a box in his parents' room. And when they found the box was empty. Was it locked? No. Was it secure? No. If it would have been, I don't know if we would be seeing the charges.
But the intention was that it was his pistol, just in his parents' possession.
That's right. But what came out was that he used his own money to buy this. So he gave the money to his father, who then in turn bought the weapon. But we're going to talk about, you know, this decision to do this based on what was really happening in the dynamic of this family. November 27th, him and his mother go to the shooting range. Now, it is said that his father had been to the shooting range with him before. I don't know if it was their own personal weapons. Because when you I think I've been to a shooting range once, but you've been multiple times. Can you borrow guns there? Do you have to bring your own gun?
Some you can rent.
Okay, rent. So maybe him and his father did rent these guns at the time. But this November 27th is with the gun that is used in the shooting at the school. And this is the one that he that was purchased. He also posted a picture to Instagram. And I'm talking about Ethan, the 15-year-old, to his Instagram account and basically saying, look, we bought my new beauty, which he's talking about the gun at the time. November 29th, he is caught Googling ammunition at school. A teacher actually sees this, and they make a phone call to the parents and share their concern with what they're seeing. So then we go into November 30th, and this is when the parents are called from the school because of a drawing that Ethan Crumbly does on his math homework. So he draws basically a gun pointing at someone's head, and then he also draws a bullet, and I think it says something like, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it says something like blood everywhere. And then there's something else written on that piece of paper like, I can't wait to do this, or, you know, insinuating that possibly something is going to happen. Now, I'm not going to get to the astonishing part. There's some like I can't even believe that grown adults and how many hands were in this, that this actually happened. But let's talk about November 30th and the day this goes down. The first is the phone call about the homework, Chris. The parents, by the way, there's text messages of the parents talking back and forth, like Jennifer is messaging her husband and telling him that there's a problem at school. Like there is an issue. Now that they've looked at cell phone records, they see this conversation happening between the two adults, right? So they both show up. Cameras show them both going into the school at the same time. And when they get there, the counselor basically says, listen, there's something not right here. Like, we really advise you to get him some help. There's some things that he shared with the counselor. His best friend had moved away all of a sudden, no reason. He had lost his grandmother recently. He had also lost his dog, the family dog that he loved. So this child is dealing with some things. And he is actually writing in a journal, which we'll talk about in a second. So parents are called. They arrive at the school. The counselor shares their concern for what's happening. And instead of what most parents would do, which is take their child home, talk to them about what's happening, both parents say they cannot leave, that he should be able to stay at school, and they both have to return to work. And you see them both leave the school together. That's strike one. Well, there's multiple strikes before that. But this is the day of the crime, okay? So, Chris, they leave, okay?
And so I guess they had to get back to work. Is that why they were saying he was fit to stay? I don't know.
They were saying that the counselor was saying, listen, we're caught. He's caught Googling ammunition the day before.
I guess I'm saying, why did the school even allow him to stay? Like, why was it the parents'
choice? Well,
they're going to
come under heat. Well, I think it's because, I don't know. Are you obligated? I mean, I can't answer that. Bad decision. It was a bad decision among others that day.
Well, I'm just saying, like, they see something as blatant as Googling ammunition.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this doesn't sound like a rural area. You know, it's not hunting season or whatever. And, of course, I don't know, a lot of the red flags or whatever. So why was there even an option for him to stay in school that day?
Well, I think it is.
I mean, would you not say that potential suspension or something like that, if they're that concerned?
Well, the parents.
Because it sounds like they're concerned enough to reach out to the parents.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, honestly, the counselor will testify in the trial, and he will say, I really, at the time, I mean, you go back and you think about this, right, and the decisions they made. But he said at the time, he didn't think it was, like, that big of a threat. Like, he was literally going to do something like that day. He knew there were mental things going on, and I think that was very clear. But if the parents just say they can't take him, and they're going back to work, I mean, I don't know. What are you going to do? I mean, but here's what they didn't do, Chris. And this is what is so hard to wrap your mind around is, and by the way, the parents never disclosed to the counselor nor anyone else in that meeting, which took, I do believe the meeting was about 20 minutes long. They were not there very long. But I will say they never once disclosed the fact they had just bought him a gun. Not only that the gun he drew looked exactly like the gun they had just bought. I mean, so many mistakes. Chris, he had his backpack, okay? They had this kid.
Well, I mean, in all reality, though, they clearly they're ignoring whatever red flag you say. The kid, they just bought the kid a gun. You bought somebody a gun. They're looking up ammunition. I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's more leading up to it, but I mean, yeah, these are bad, well, very inattentive parents is what it sounds like. I mean, I don't know about bad parents or how you even portray that, but I guess nobody wants to believe that their kid is going to shoot a school, and they knew they did buy him the gun. I'm not saying it's wrong to buy a kid a gun either, you know, because clearly there's lots of kids that have guns and don't go out and shoot up schools. So,
yeah,
as long as it's a safety thing and, you know, it's not something.
Well, the problem with this. Well, the problem with this is that he's okay. So months before this happens, months. Okay, there are text messages to his mother. So this is when everything comes into trial. Is he's telling his mom that he's seeing clothes being thrown around in the house. He's seeing and hearing things in his head that are telling him to do bad things. He is seeing ghosts.
Oh, I think they shouldn't have even bought him the gun to begin with based on his state of mind. But they seem awfully clueless to anything that's going on.
Well,
because if you truly think that your child is about to have some sort of a breakdown, nobody's that big of an idiot.
Oh, we're dealing with a couple of idiots.
I know, we're saying they're idiots because they were completely ignoring and oblivious to anything that was going on. I think if they had any sort of inkling, you know, clearly.
You know, I wish I, for, okay, well, and here's another thing. The two were actually represented by two completely different defense attorneys. And the father's defense attorney was actually on the Dr. Phil show. So they were represented by two different people. The mother was tried and convicted first, and then the husband was tried and convicted next. But the thing is, and basically their defense, the father's defense, is that he had no idea his son was having mental issues, right? But his mother, there is text in writings. Okay, he had a 50 to 60 page journal full of things about guns, shootings, mental health. He wrote help on pretty much every single page. And I think this was, first of all, this was not hard for the prosecutor to press charges against these parents, because it's not necessarily, it's what they didn't do, right? It's what they didn't do. They like you said, they ignored the messages. I mean, this kid is literally asking his parents for mental health counseling, and they have record, Chris, that the mother never even responded to any of this. None of it. In all those years, they looked at 6 years of text messages between the father and the mother. Chris, not one communication to each other was about the boy. Not one. Not one saying, listen, he's reached out and I'm concerned today. It was about their sex. It was about their videotaping of their sex. It was about the shitty relationship that they really had. It was about her affair, which they now believe that's where she is spending the other half of the time, unless she was with her husband and not with her own child. So they look at all of this, and it's like, how, you know, where do you draw the line as in the justice system of accountability and the right thing to do? And then who do you charge and why? And I think that what the judge said, they did a list of things. There's a list of things they could have done and they just didn't do. And I think it comes down to accountability.
They clearly knew.
They clearly knew. Not only that, they didn't disclose really any of the mental health stuff to the school either.
Just because the mother and father didn't have a text message between the two of them doesn't mean that they never had a conversation about it in 6 years.
That's true. It's just they found it really strange that all the communication between the texting, none of it had to do with their actual child. All right, so November 30th is when this crime takes place. Chris, 90 minutes after they leave that meeting, he is seen going into the bathroom, dumping things out of his backpack, and then pulling out a gun and loading it. He goes into the bathroom to load the gun. He comes out of the bathroom. He's seen on camera coming out of the bathroom. Oh, and by the way, that 90 minutes after, that 90 minutes, his mother actually texted him. Hey, are you okay? I'm worried about you. Is everything all right? Yeah, Mom, sorry for all about this. Just left lunch, you know, going to my next class. Chris, 9 minutes later is when he started shooting after her text message. 9 minutes later. So after she texts him and he says he's sorry, he goes into the bathroom, loads the gun, and then comes out and decides to shoot. And now it's time for a wine recess. All right. So we had dinner.
We had dinner.
Cake.
Dinner and dessert.
lots of wine. We had Cabernet Sauvignon.
Three from Horseshoe Bend, because we had the cab that we had with our meal.
Yes, we did.
The cherry kirsch that I made, Black Forest cake, traditional Black Forest cake. And then, of course, the chocolate wine sauce that we had a little.
They covered it all for us.
They covered it all. So we had a Cabernet Sauvignon, and so we chose to make just a simple New York strip with some, lemon, rosemary, roasted potatoes, and creamed Brussels sprouts,
which were so good.
But something different.
It was good.
And it was good. It was good. The cake, I had never made a homemade cake before, like from scratch. So that was interesting.
From scratch. I want to say that again. From scratch. It was really good.
It's way easier to make out of a box.
It definitely is. But, you know, allergies, guys, sorry. The kids could not get enough of your cake. And they just kept coming back for more. So...
Yes, the kirsch was really good too. We sipped a little bit on that. And then, of course, I had never made a homemade cake or a Black Forest cake. So, but yeah, it was really nice. Very mellow wine. It went really nice with the beef and potatoes and very nice meal.
Yeah, it was so good. Thank you, Horseshoe Bend.
The kirsch is really good too. I have to say that's, just a nice little something to sip on. I really enjoyed that. It was sipping on it as you were making it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, the nice little tart cherries and not too sweet.
No. And I even told you that. I said, this is the thing about your cake. It's not like overly sweet.
Yeah.
It was really good.
I mean, I think I did have to look, I'm not like I whipped it up. I looked up a recipe, but I think it was one of the things too, just kind of moderately sweet and
moderately sweet. Very, it was perfect.
Very balanced.
It was great. Thank you, Horseshoe Bend Cellars. Our friends right in Iowa Park, Texas, right outside of Wichita Falls, they have a tasting room. They do different events, including like a murder mystery that looks like so much fun. So please visit our friends at Horseshoe Bend Cellars Vineyard and Winery and tell them your friends at Texas Wine and True Crime sent you. All right, honey, you ready to jump back in?
Certainly.
All right, let's do it. Okay, so we said 90 minutes after the parents leave the school, the mother sends Ethan a text message checking on him. 9 minutes later, he walks into that bathroom and comes out and starts shooting. Now, I mentioned his four victims, Chris. What authorities and people who were there and actually saw this happen, they said Ethan comes out of the bathroom. He turns left. He shoots that direction. He turns to the right. He sees a group of four girls standing there. So he opens fire on the girls. Teachers are now kind of figuring out what's going on. They're, you know, locking the students in the classrooms. He ends up going into another bathroom, Chris, and that's where
what was his beef with the students? He was, I guess, part of his journal.
Yeah. So a lot of the
picked on or something like that too.
Well,
or that just was.
I don't know about so much about like the actual bullying of Ethan. I can't. I'm sure there were some passages in his, but I don't. It wasn't. You know, he put in one of his journal entries that he wants to make sure like a pretty girl that's going to do something with her life is killed. So you know, first of all, this kid has a lot of mental health stuff going on. I mean, he's seeing clothes fly around his house and he's hearing voices telling him to do bad things. So I think when we try to get in his mind, it's like, was it bullying? Was it rage? I think that he had some demons and I think that he knew he needed help. And if he didn't get it, something really bad was going to happen. And unfortunately it did. By the way, like I said, Ethan has already been convicted. They tried him as an adult. He'll spend the rest of his life in prison for killing these four students. But Chris, here's the hard thing to get your mind around. And then we talk about school accountability. So this is something that, by the way, a lot of schools are protected by law when it comes to holding the school accountable for something like this, for a student like this. Where does the line draw for school accountability? And this might also set another precedent because, let me say, the parents of these students, these victims, they're not stopping. They are determined to hold this school accountable. Because Chris, he had his backpack with him that day. If they would have looked in his backpack, if a family member would have looked in his backpack, they would have found this journal with 60 pages full of rage. Do they
normally search backpacks when kids come to school?
I do not believe that they were doing this. No, because they would have found the gun. So no, I'm going to say no. And then there's this thing of like teenagers in backpacks. As parents, are we checking them? Well, I'll tell you what. My kid, she's 10. I might be packing her stuff up to make sure she's got everything she needs. Because if she doesn't, I've got to drive something to school. So I don't know if it's – and I like cleaning out her backpack and looking at stuff. So she's almost a teenager.
You're not going to do that when she's a teenager.
Chris, I guarantee you I will be. Because I am just that parent. I'm not expecting everyone to do that. But you know what the parents didn't do, Chris? They didn't go home and check for the gun. They didn't go home and check and thought, you know what? I'm a little concerned because that gun he just drew, gosh, you know what? We just bought him one 4 days ago. We better go make sure that is there where it's supposed to be, because it wasn't until the school shooting happened. The father gets a phone call. He realizes the commotion. So his attorney, who was on the Dr. Phil show, will say that the father actually went to the like the together point, right? They weren't letting people close to the campus. There was like this little community point where you could check on your kids or ask questions. So he goes there first thinking he's going to see his son. Now, I'm just saying this is what his attorney says. At that time, he goes home and he checks for the gun, Chris. That's when he calls 911. He calls 911. He says, listen, I was at the school earlier. My son is having some problems. I don't know what's going on. I heard there's a school shooting down the street, but I want to let you know my gun is not here. I mean, it's like, and I think right then he knew. And I don't know if it's like guilt. I don't know if it's because he's not wanting to get in trouble, but a big piece, excuse me, a big piece of this case is the fact that they didn't have this piece locked up. It wasn't locked. And now that we know statistically where kids are getting guns from, which is in their own home, these guns are not locked. So because of this case, because of this conviction, they are now trying to move into legislation for parents to be held accountable for not locking up their weapons. If your kid takes a gun out of your house and he goes into a school and he shoots someone, you are liable and can be held accountable for simply not locking it up. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I mean, I think the circumstances are all different. You know, I mean, I don't know if you had a very attentive parent and still their kid did something like this and you did everything right. And they still, you know, because then what's next? Are we going to say kitchen knives? Somebody goes on a slash rampage or something like that?
No, that's a very valid question, because I'm telling you, this has opened a can of worms for some people.
And I would also venture to say that I bet 10 to 15% of gun owners own a gun safe. Do you know what a gun safe costs?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, they're expensive,
then what are other
even
ways?
Small ones. And I don't know. A lot of people, I'm kind of tend to ride along in this boat too. I mean, if your gun is locked up in a gun safe,
how do you get it when you need it?
Precisely. So, you know, Aaron, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. And then
that's the other thing too. It's the whole gun, you know, if they're not locked up, I don't know how you could instantaneously say that they're held responsible just because it's not locked up. There's so many other weapons that you could also use too. And like I mentioned, a knife, mm-hmm. who knows, you know, mm-hmm. somebody goes to the, you know, what do you call it? The flea market on Sunday and buys a samurai sword or something, you know, and gets that and takes home and sharpens it. And I mean, so who? I don't know. I mean,
samurai swords aren't the number one killer of children this country. It's gun violence.
Well, I know, but
right?
I'm just saying it's still a weapon. And so
sure.
You can't sit there. What are we going to start? It's a weapon. You can't just nitpick over some specific type of weapon or whatever.
No, I think we're talking about gun violence.
And these particular parents, I think, you know, they're held responsible based on the circumstances.
Yeah, but their lack of action, right? You don't go buy your son a gun.
Because I know a lot of people that were complete idiots who had good parents. And their kids still did really stupid stuff. They even did stupid stuff when they grew up to be adults. So is that always the parents' fault?
No, that's not what we're saying.
No,
we're saying if you take a gun,
I know. I'm just saying one of those stupid things, though, could have been one of those, you know.
And I think, and listen, that is a valid point, and that is actually what a lot of parents are saying about this case is how, oh my gosh,
but these parents knew this kid was in dire straits.
That's right.
So that's a little bit of a different
different
deal as far as holding people responsible.
Well, and I think the gross negligence, right, because this is what they're going to end up charging them with, is you go and you buy the kid a gun, right? He's showing all the signs to you. He only showed some signs to the school, but he showed a lot of signs to his parents. A lot of cries for help.
I'm against the purchase of the gun based on all the stuff they knew leading up to the purchase of the gun. But
yeah,
15-year-old, you know, a properly trained 15-year-old. I mean, I don't know. I had a gun when I was 15 years old, bought for me. It wasn't locked up. It was mine. I didn't go shoot anybody. Never had intended to.
Did you ever play with it when you had another friend around in your house?
Play with it?
Sure. Load it, unload it, show someone?
No, because I knew how to safely handle a gun at that age. I had my first gun when I was 13. Okay. It was a 22
But I
rifle.
Just want but my point is so, this is what teenage boys do though. They get access to guns. They pull it
up. That's not what all okay. teenage boys do.
Not, I didn't say all.
But you said that's what teenage boys do.
Yeah, the ones that the case.
This some teenage boys do that, and some of them do some really stupid stuff. So if I was an idiot, or my parents thought I had any sort of warning signs, they probably wouldn't have gotten me those as Christmas presents over the years. And so when I was
know,
a kid.
But I feel like we're living in a different. I feel like we're kind of in a different world than when you and I were young like this. I feel like gun violence was not the number one killer of children when you and I were this age. It is now the number one killer of children is gun violence. 90% of those guns are coming from inside of the house. So to me, Chris,
But they were always coming there from before because no kid could purchase a gun. So why, I mean...
Because back then we didn't pick up, well, because I'm sure you can go and find some cases when there was violence from taking the gun at the house and going and shooting people. But we've never seen it this bad. We've never seen it with this bad with gun violence in children. I don't remember 15, 20 years ago being gun violence being the number one killer of children. If I'm wrong, anyone out there, please let me know. But here's what I do know.
I don't think it was.
We have an obligation to protect our kids. It starts at home.
I think there was probably more kids that had guns purchased for them whenever I was a kid versus now, too. So
I agree with that.
That was a more common thing where guns are taboo. You don't. It used to be you go to a birthday party and you'd get, you know, cap guns, dart guns, Nerf guns, all kinds of stuff. I feel like now if I bought a Nerf gun and took it to a party, I might be shunned from school and kicked out. Because of how probably. People's opinions are. So I almost think there is a more negative attitude towards them now. I don't know why there would be more violence. I just know there was, I don't know, it was way more common.
Well, I think we
I know lots of people that don't own a gun. I feel like I knew more people that owned guns when I was younger than as an adult, just because people's attitude and stance and you know, they're kind of against them.
I don't know what is... I mean, again, it's not like you and I, Chris, have done a lot of studies on the brain and young people. No, and we are not experts. We are not experts in why this seems to be happening more nowadays than it used to, or what the rush is, or what the hurting and shooting up a school. I don't know, but here's what I do know.
Well, that's why I wonder if there was some particular beef with something at school, like why choose to...
Well, he had no friends. His only friend had moved away unexpectedly. I mean, the kid had already told counselors what he was dealing with. The school had some idea.
I know, but I guess when you do school, it kind of leads you to believe there was a specific target of some sort, you know, versus just going to a park. I mean, it doesn't matter if he had friends, if you're going to go... If you want to kill people, I guess you could go anywhere. Was that just because he was a kid and that's his only frame of reference for a crowded place is a school? I don't know.
I mean, it's just – and then – but here's also what the court looked at. You know, Ethan Crumbly, the court did not think that this child was not completely ignored. I mean, there's – I don't know what's worse – like just not being able to get the help you need or for whatever the circumstances, but just to be completely ignored by the people that are there to protect you. And you're asking them a cry for help. And the fact that, and so Chris, we left off with the dad going, making that 911 call. They realize the gun is gone. And then, of course, they find out it's their son. So what happens after this? The prosecutor, they are going to go after the parents. I've already said they have already been tried and convicted. Again, this is a very, very recent case. So if you don't know about it, you know, you can do your own research. And I do believe there's a new Hulu special, I think, coming out about this trial. But Chris, the prosecution knew immediately they were going after the parents. They bought the gun. They knew there were mental problems. They knew he was asking for help. The school counselor, the teachers, they had reached out. But so they decide to go and tell them that they're going to arrest them. They are going to, they are now pressing charges. But what do? They decide to flee, Chris. They actually end up in Detroit. And that this is still in Michigan. They're still in Michigan. But they are supposed to turn themselves in. And they don't show up. So now there's a warrant out for their arrest. So they go to a Detroit, I want to say it was some sort of like music building. It kind of reminded me of like you and your band when you would rent those places out. It kind of looked like some sort of studio. Well, someone called 911, recognized them, saw them, looked outside. They could tell it was her. And a 911 call is made and they are arrested right there in Detroit. So where they were going, what they were going to do, nobody really knows, but they didn't turn themselves in. I mean, I think they were about to go on the run. Which, again, is like...
Sounds like they're not too, too against illegal. you got to be a little crazy to go run from the law. So had they had some run-ins with the law before or something like that?
Well, you're dealing with two alcoholics. Their house looked like an episode of Hoarders. This child had two bedrooms because one would be so overflowed with trash and clothes.
I mean, they must have really thought they were screwed if they ran.
Of course. And then he would just move to the other room and then that would pile up. I mean, there was no structure. And I say this over and over about children. They desperately need structure and want it. They just naturally crave it. And if you don't give it to them as parents, this is the kind of thing that happens. It becomes disorderly. They get ignored. The mother is having this affair in a parking lot. She's meeting this guy like every other day when she's not at work and she's not with her husband. So her lack of attentiveness for this child. And by the way, when they made their statements in court, it was all about me. I'm sad. You know, this, they never address like the fact that they bought this weapon. That they said they're sorry their son did this, they're sorry this happened. But Chris, they never, ever really take accountability for buying that weapon and saying, you know what, I should have done things differently. In fact, Jennifer Crumbly, when asked, what would you have done differently? And she's like, I don't know really what I would have done differently. I mean, these are the kind of people we're dealing with. I mean, you just don't, I mean... being arrested and being tried for this and about to spend 10 to 15 years of your life in prison and you still don't know what you would have done differently. I mean,
they don't really sound like the type of people that were going to do anything, period. So no matter what, even if they, like you said, could they go back in time, they're not going to address any of his problems or concerns or anything like that.
So the parents, Chris, are now in prison. They'll spend at least 10 years there. Ethan Crumbly will spend the rest of his life. I do believe he has no available parole ever. But the one thing that, and here's the other deal that they tried to basically say, is that they had there's no evidence, right, that they knew about this journal. There's really no evidence of the text messages to his friends. Of course, they know about the text messages to the mother directly, which were unbelievable. And the only reason I know about these is because I was on the Dr. Phil show and they put them up because like everyone that was involved in the actual case and in the court system, they were there on this panel. And I, Chris, I was in tears like, we're literally wiping our eyes because you just hear the desperation in his voice. Yes, did this kid go and take four lives? Absolutely. He's being held accountable for that. It is a horrible, horrible tragedy. But the fact that, you know, he just so desperately was asking for the help and just completely ignored by his parent, it's just heartbreaking.
Well, they don't deserve to be in jail for that.
No.
They only deserve to be in jail because they got him a gun.
No, that's not the only reason they're in jail. They're in jail because they did nothing.
I'm just saying. I think that's probably why they...
But see, we can't say that because you're allowed to buy your kids a gun. Like, that's the thing. We're not going to...
But if you buy your kid a gun and they go, it's kind of like...
So if you can afford a gun, Chris, if you can afford a gun, can I afford a gun case?
Can I speak, though? I'll use the example of what's that, the wrestler whose kid killed that friend, killed his friend in the fast car. And so they were trying to hold the parent responsible because he bought the fast car for the parent. I mean, for the kid, Hulk Hogan. And so, he murdered, it didn't murder somebody, but he killed somebody. And so that happens a lot, you know, when you find drunk driving and accidents and things, and parents let kids come to their house and drink, and they're held responsible for things. And so, I mean,
sure,
clearly he did something heinous with this weapon that they purchased for him. But I mean, you know, and that's what I mean. They purchased the weapon because they did nothing. They didn't do anything. Even if they did nothing, they still didn't need to purchase a weapon for him. Because you have shitty parents, don't go to jail for being a shitty parent.
No, that's right.
They're even shittier because they didn't recognize anything and still bought him a gun, and he went out and did something shitty with the gun. So,
well, and I don't, considering they bought it 4 days before, and this kid has the time to write 60 pages of what he would do with a gun. Like, that's the cause from concern, right? Like, you never, you know, that's the thing. Well, our clients didn't know about this journal. Well, then maybe you have the obligation to pay a little bit more attention
as a
parent.
They knew because
Chris, he wasn't going hunting. This kid wanted the gun for destruction,
and you don't hunt with pistols. So,
I'm just saying, even
the text messages without even seeing the journal would lead a normal person to say, this kid probably needs something else besides a gun.
Yeah.
Maybe a puzzle. I don't know.
Yeah. But they chose the gun and completely ignored the cries for help. And this is, you know, and they're all serving their time for that. This is just, it's not the last school shooting we're ever going to hear about, but I do want to say this. This is a crisis in our country, Chris. I know this isn't about the amendment. This isn't about arguing about whether people should own guns. This is about if you can buy a gun in your house, you have to be able to reasonably cut off access to that gun, whatever that is. You have to cut off access to that gun to your kids, because if they take that gun and they go and do something with it, then you now possibly could be held accountable for that action. And not only that, just for safety reasons, just to kind of let's cut this epidemic that we're dealing with in gun violence in this country and be more responsible with them. And Chris, it doesn't start at the kid level. It starts at the parent level. So if I'm looking at the number one killer of our children as guns, there has to be something done. And if that thing being done is to put into legislation that parents can be held accountable if their child takes a gun that is not secured in the home and they leave with it and do something with it, or now if this, another child is killed in their house.
Number one killer, this is not, you're talking like including diseases and things? I just want to know where you're hearing, knowing this is the number one killer of children.
That I have read, and what the Dr. Phil people were talking about is that gun violence in this country is the number one killer of our children.
But it's not the number one killer of children. Gun violence, you're saying.
Gun violence is killing our kids.
So
yes.
There's more kids killed with guns than adults.
I don't know. No, I didn't say that. That an adult is not a child. They wouldn't be in that statistic.
I know. And then also, but I mean, I don't know. That's the number one killer of kids.
So just so we're clear, right? When we look at birth to 17-year-olds, the number one cause of death is always for what? Seven decades? Car accidents, yes. Right? But when we include 18-year-olds, when we include 19-year-olds, they're still considering them, I suppose, teens, right?
Some people will use that data to say include them in the
right
kid age group because kid they're still group. Teenagers, essentially. However,
that's right.
Know, when you turn 18, you're typically an adult. So,
yeah.
Nonetheless, so, there's a lot of people dying from guns.
Yeah, we can agree. I mean, well, and also how if you looked at we know an active shooter, Chris, is going to be somewhere between, and this is just from profiling, because they've had to figure out not necessarily getting into the minds of why they're doing this, but who is capable of doing this. So you look at 13, you know, the most groups are 13 to 17-year-olds. They know they're white males. They usually are very recluse. They don't really have a lot of friends. They wear head-to-toe clothing, right? Just maybe like full black. Maybe they feel like they're...
Oh, no, let's not start poking at the goths.
It's not about being a goth. Seriously? I'm just saying. There's a list of things. Go Google it, folks. If you want to kind of be aware of who your kids are talking to, hanging around with. And here's the thing. They talked about this on the Dr. Phil show, and I'm going to say it now because we always talk about reporting. Report it. If you see something suspicious, if you look at your kid's phone and you see that one of their friends has texted them that they are angry and want to shoot up a school, you need to report that. We have to be doing better as a community. This is why the parents, Chris, of these victims, they want this school held accountable. They want, Chris... They immediately had a phone call put out to the insurance company at this school. They wanted all the teachers to be silent. They did a lot of things to protect themselves, and they knew that they were protected under a law. But, they did all of this before they even notified the families that they had lost their children. Okay? They were looking out for themselves. And they see it. The court sees it. And I'm telling, they're not going to let this one go. They are determined to hold this school accountable and not be able to hide behind a law, because just like the parents, they need to be held accountable for the lack of action that they took that day.
Well, yeah, no doubt, especially if they saw some warning signs and as late as that day that all this occurred too. So
yeah. All right. Well, this is a tough one. You know, again, as a community, let's just keep an eye on your kids. Let's pay attention, eyes and ears open, even if it's not our own child, right? We're here to look out for each other. So until next time, friends, stay safe, have fun, and cheers to next time.
Cheers.